Hello, friends. I am Cindy Thompson, and this is a Resilience Project. This is a space where stories are shared and possibilities are discovered. I invite you to partner with me in cultivating resilience among humans, one conversation at a time. I am very excited to share this conversation with you. First of all, how many of you can think of one or two key people in your life that have had a dynamic impact on you? Was it a coach, a teacher, or a family member? In this episode, we are highlighting some key elements to growing resilience, focusing on positive relationships, growing community, and the value of finding your purpose or meaning. I have been reading Martin Seligman's book called Flourish, in which he talks about well-being. He suggests positive emotion, engagement, positive relationships, finding meaning, and a sense of accomplishment are the cornerstones that create a sense of well-being. When we get engaged in our community in a meaningful way, we also have an opportunity to meet like-minded people while also achieving a sense of accomplishment. This can be in a small increment or in a larger, more profound way. I believe the shift from seeking happiness to achieving a sense of well-being is sustainable and within your reach. Our guest, Steve Anderson, is someone who's been developing his secret sauce over a number of years and naturally inspires those around him to develop their gifts. Steve has been participating in several projects that echoes Seligman's key elements for well-being. In each of Steve's roles, he is fanning a natural spark in others to grow empathy, and as you will discover, he is in that 20% of the population that will be the first to step up and get involved. With over 29 years as a teacher, Steve Anderson suggests that he has rocked the worlds of his high school students in his applied psychology program. He is the executive director of the Wanted Children Foundation, a child rescue project in Nigeria founded by his eldest daughter, Courtney. And participating in many instrumental community roles, Steve also created a peer support human services program in Chilliwack. Why? Because he believes in building healthy relationships at both individual and community levels. I feel like this episode should come with a warning. Caution, this guest's energy and passion is likely to be contagious. Steve, thank you so much for taking the time to be in conversation today on a resilience project.
So nice to be here. I appreciate you putting the word out.
Absolutely. And when we anticipated talking today, there's so much here that we want to cover, I think, because there's some really cool aspects of what you're doing that I'm really interested in. I think the listeners will be interested in. But let's start with the organization that you have become involved with, the African Relief Fund and the Wanted Children Foundation. Can you sort of paint a picture of how the Wanted Children Foundation got started or where you got involved? And what that spark was like for you?
The Wanted Children Foundation was created by or founded by our eldest daughter, Courtney. And she spent some time in an orphanage in Ghana when she was probably 13, 14. And she went down with a lady that we knew. The lady had told her when she was really, really young, one day I'm going to take you to Africa. And that was kind of that. And then when Courtney was about 14, maybe 14, 15, I guess, the lady came and she said, you're 15 now. Now it's time for you to come down to Africa with me. And so Courtney was working in an orphanage in Ghana with Mama Ruby, was her name, at that time for a number of months. And at that point in time, fell in love with, I'm going to say African children, orphan African children, and the whole concept. Obviously, her level of empathy grew exponentially. And then she came home from that and finished school, finished high school here at CSS and went off to university. And then quite a number of years later, found herself questioning, you know, a lot of what was going on, life, decided to get away, ended up doing a trip to Australia. And part of her time down there included a working trip somewhere on the globe. And she found herself in Nigeria. And her team was in Nigeria working with, at that time, street prostitutes, and they would be in the 12, 13, 14 year old range in Nigeria. And she was there, came back, following that trip. I'm Reader's Digesting this a little bit.
You bet, sure.
But sat her mom and I down and said, you know, I have to go back. Like, I just can't come back to, you know, managing the company that she had. There are so many children. I can't see that. What do you think? And we both looked at each other and said, well, you know, if that's where your heart is, if that's where your passion is, then you have to go. You have to go back and, you know, we'll figure out how to figure it out.
Sure.
But if that's where your joy is going to be, then you better get at it. And so she went back to Nigeria into the Port Harcourt region and, you know, began working and making contacts. That transitioned a little bit north in the country to a very rural area. She went up there with some of the local friends that she had met. And that's where she really felt that's the place that she needed to begin working. And so she did. She began working with, I would say, street urchins, but there's no streets. This is village.
Yes.
Village life, no power, no water. And she began working there and in the process with her, you know, set up the Wanted Children Foundation because you got to have money come from somewhere. And so we put that together. At that time, one of our local Rotary clubs here in Chilliwack, the Thursday morning group, Mount Sheem Rotary, she was home on furlough and went and presented her idea there. And there was overwhelming enthusiasm in the club that this is a great deal. And so they kind of got behind it on a number of big pushes over the years and helped out and helped a couple of the lawyers in the club help pro bono set up foundation. And that's where it started. She went back to Africa, obviously. So she spent the better part of probably 16, 17 years there doing back and forth here when the country there got a little wild and crazy, being polite, and where it was just not safe for her to be there. And so she went back and forth. Now she needed a home there. And one of the interesting pieces was a man from the village who lives in Nashville heard that this white girl, this Canadian girl, was looking for a home for orphan children in his village. And she got a call out of the blue from this man. He identified himself. She didn't know who he was. And he said, you are looking for a home. And she's like, who are you? And he says, well, I have a home that you can have. I've just finished building it. Big home on fence, you know, walled gates.
Yeah.
And just like that, he said, you may use this. Well, how big is it? He goes, I think it will be big enough. And she says, well, you know, how long can we use it? Well, you may use it for as long as you need it. And that began a 10-year, 12-year, a little more, maybe even 14 years of that being the base in the village region of the Wanted Children Foundation.
Wow. And that's what starts with a passion. Like if you just have a spark of interest in something, but it's wrestling and you can't let it go. I love that you as parents really supported Courtney to follow that passion.
Yeah. She was always our bold child.
Is that right?
Yeah, really. You know, she's always had stick with itness and follow through. And I'm not saying the others don't because they do as well. But, you know, Courtney is very committed to the things she gets involved with, always was. And to this day is. So, you know, the years down there, starting in 05 is when it all sort of started, 04, 05, was hard, very hard, like really very, very hard, right? When you're the lone Caucasian, you know, within hundreds and hundreds of miles, you know, you don't blend and everything you do is, you know, visible to those around. And one of many kudos that would go out to Courtney would be like when people in the area were starving, when food was scarce, it was also scarce. On the project site, she also went without food. And so she earned her way into the region and earned the respect by not being apart from, but being day to day what they were going through locally and regionally, she was going through as well.
Yeah, I can hear the pride that you have in seeing that in your daughter, the strengths that she has for whatever she puts her mind to.
Yeah.
And willing to self-sacrifice.
Yeah, big time. Right. And it took years for us to be legally accepted there in order to actually have children in the project site. So while it was all set up here, running all of this formality through a very formal but inefficient system takes time. And so for years, it was feeding programs, feeding children, setting up sort of day camps, soccer. And so the perseverance and the patience over a long period of time and the tenacity to just keep going and keep going was astounding. And it stayed that way for a lot of years.
Well, and what would Courtney have been seeing, like these children that were coming? Obviously, there's a need probably in the whole village of hunger, of poverty. Look, I understand it's for orphan children now. Was it always the vision for orphan children that were maybe abandoned?
Yeah, orphaned and vulnerable children. Nigeria at this point in time today, and my numbers might be off a little bit, but the numbers are so huge. Currently, I would say that the number of children qualified as orphaned and or vulnerable children runs in the 20 million mark. So that's half the population of Canada. There are children with abject poverty, homeless. The death rate of moms, you know, in birth or after birth is staggering. I don't know what the number is, so I won't put it out there right now, but it's staggering. And so for her to, first of all, understanding adverse childhood experiences and the effects of early childhood on the later development of the brain, you know, she was always committed to, you know, how can we change this? And then the vision all along was not to start an orphanage, but a children's home.
I see.
The family-based model. So you've got consistent adults who love and care for. You have limited numbers of children. So it's not a, you know, it's not a homeless child farm. It's a family. Everybody comes to the dinner table at the same time. Everybody has chores and, you know, love, care, nurture, respect, empathy. Those are all things that have been modeled on a regular basis since we were able to take in children.
Yeah. And so I think, did you say that it's about 8 years since the orphanage has been running or the child home has been established?
Yeah, I'm going to go back a little further than that. There came a point in time where frustration was running pretty high. And we went down, took a team of the directors down. And the idea was to do an assessment and say, like, are we going to keep trying or is it time to fold this? Like, is it not going to work? And so we actually went in with that idea for 3 weeks. We found ourselves in the capital, and I'm not exactly sure how we ended up meeting at that time, the director of the Secret Service, a man from our region. And so, you know, our whole team had to go in and be fingerprinted and went through all the security and got in to meet this gentleman. He's become a good friend and a valued friend in the country. So he sat down and he was interviewing us. So how are you? How are things? How are things in the village? You know, that is my village. I'm from that region. And, you know, I'm a high school teacher in Chilliwack. When was the last time I met the head of security for a country?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we all sat in this man's office and he said, so how are things going? And I remember Courtney saying, it's just very, very difficult. And it just remains so difficult. Everything is so difficult. And he looked and he says, and yet you have been here since 2004. And we all looked at him and we thought, okay, now how would he know that? Well, yes. Obviously, he's the director of the country's Secret Service. But then all of a sudden it was like, well, wait a minute. Okay, this guy is one of the leaders in the country and he's aware of it. So he said, and yet you are still here after all this time. And Courtney said, yeah. And we answered, yeah, we're still here. And he said, why? And our response was, because we just don't feel that it's done yet, that we just don't feel it's time to go. And he nodded his head and he said, so how may I help you?
Wow.
And that was like the gates kind of opened and it was like, somebody knows. And at that point in time, things began to change. We had the ear of him and some of his friends that would be, I would say, leaders in the country. Of the leadership of the country, probably not. But with that man, yes. And so things did begin to change. And we also came into contact about the same time with the what they call the Igwe, the grand chief of the region. And a very interesting fellow. And I would say we love him a lot. He's an older fellow now. But he also said, no, let's help you. And at that point in time, things began to move. And we were recognized and were able to take children. And very quickly took in about 15 children over time. And that's about, at this point in time, that's about maximum for what we can handle right now. We still feeding programs, still sports programs, but on site are the now 14 children.
Wow. And do I understand there's a home also in Uganda as well as Nigeria?
No, the home in Uganda is that the school sponsors is called Jaja Barb's Home for Angels or Home of Angels. And Barb Gerard is a grandma out of Abbotsford. And for years, she made headlines here baking banana bread. She originally started baking banana bread to support orphans. And she had some really neat stuff happen for her. Save On Foods kind of got on board, and she's got some really neat stories, and she's worth you chasing her up because she's just a dynamo. And so her orphanage in Uganda, it made sense in the school here. If we were to have a club, which we already had the African Relief Club in the school, and if we were to sponsor just our orphanage, the optics of that were not good, you know, being that I'm the executive director of it, even though we take no salaries. So at the time, we decided that we would take on another orphanage project or child rescue project. And this one in Uganda made good sense. So the AFCAF, the African Relief Cafe at Chilliwack Secondary, the funds we raise go to the two orphanage projects.
I see.
The one in Nigeria and the one in Uganda.
Gotcha. Okay. And that sounds like a great segue. Not that we can't go back to Nigeria and some of the challenges that your daughter has faced. I really love that you have referenced the AFCAF that you have started. And do you want to talk a little bit about what that's brought for your students in starting the cafe and creating some fundraising in the club?
So now with COVID, everything's been changed.
Sure. But
prior to COVID, the club for years probably had more members, like 30 plus students on a Tuesday lunch hour. Generally for years, we ran it on Tuesdays, would come into the classroom, and we would just do information on what's really going on the ground in not just Africa, but other countries, but primarily Africa, Nigeria, Uganda, some of the other African countries there, so that the kids would understand reality, not TV.
Yeah.
This is what's actually going on. Here's a guy's orphanage project in Malawi or in Cameroon. I know this man. Here's their kids. Here's what's going on. Here's what's happening with the Child Liberation Army. We would deal with reality and real things. So the kids were really aware of that. They would also be kept up to date on what's happening with the children at both orphanage projects. And then when we moved from the old school to the new school, I don't even know how many years ago that was, Cindy. I mean, what?
Yeah.
I'm going to say 8 years, 7 or 8 years ago, there was allowance built into the building for some kiosks. And when they were getting ready to open the school, nothing had been planned for the kiosks. So our thought was, well, you're going to open a brand new school. You want those things occupied with something. You want some pizzazz, some juice. You know, what do we got? What's going to go on? And there was not a whole lot of response. Everybody was busy. So I proposed to the principal at the time. I said, look, the kitchen didn't want to take it on, and even though we have a great program, but they were going to be busy. So I said, how about our African Relief Club? We'll take it on and we'll set up a couple of tables and we'll do coffee. That's kind of how it started. And we'll do coffee and muffins. The space was there. It wasn't overly functional design-wise, but there was a space for like a coffee bar. So we opened that way. And of course, the students were all over it. And so we kind of primed it up, got it open, and then came and modified it a few times to now it's like walking into a, you know, school version of a Starbucks. It's really cool. It's full. It's cool. It's just cool.
Right on.
And so made a deal with Nespresso. So we sell Nespresso and coffee and iced coffees and muffins and all this kind of stuff, bagels. And the students are just crazy about volunteering there, you know, so they're learning how to be baristas and stuff. And we run a crew of three per shift. Right now with COVID, we have three lunch hours in the school. So we have, you know, three different shifts go in and run it. It's been a real hit with the international kids, you know, giving them a chance to run a barista and meet all the students and make the drinks and stuff. And over the years, yearly, not this year because things have been goofy since COVID, but traditionally we would send to both orphanages probably close to $3,000, maybe a bit more per year each.
Amazing.
So we're making money, and yes, we're able to also sponsor events locally if there's a family that's been hit hard by a fire or something. You know, it's a student-run club, and so they say, you know, can we donate money to the family? And it's like, sure. You know, like, let's look what we got and you know, make your decision. So it goes beyond just Africa a little bit. Like, they look out for our local needs as well. But primarily, it's the African projects that the money goes to.
Well, and I love the emotional intelligence that these kids are learning, but obviously they have an interest already if they're joining the club, because this is an extracurricular thing that they'd be involved with. The fact that you would have on average 30 kids joining a club like that tells me that they want to help. They want to make a difference. So there's something about that spark for them also that has caught their interest.
I would agree. The disconnect in the reality of what happens way over there impacting us here is pretty complete. There is a lack of connection. And so having the club here and having the students actually working, raising money and sending money over there, and then seeing, because I'm able to get pictures back from both our project and Barb's of what is being done over there with the money. All of a sudden, the reality of, wait a minute, we worked, we raised that money. And case in point, not quite 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, I guess, we completed a brand new project, new land. We moved from that house I described earlier. We have our own new land. It's our own. It's walled. It's got a brand new sort of school office counseling building. It's got a brand new girls' dorm.
Wow.
The boys' building is up, but it's not finished, but we're hoping. And the well on that property was put in by money directly from the school. And so the kids are aware. They look at, there's the tower in the photos. There's the big tanks. There's the water. It's completely drinkable water. We've run it through the wall out to the community. And so that wouldn't be there. That community wouldn't have that source of water if it wasn't for monies raised in a cafe in a high school in Chilliwack, British Columbia.
How sweet.
That's a pretty nice tight loop, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and what came to mind is kids helping kids. Like our kids that grow up here in Canada that would be attending the school, for the most part, have no idea what those kids in Nigeria might be going through. And the fact that you're able to bridge that and give them something they can do about it, but they're also learning a skill by being a barista and serving the kids at the school, learning a life skill, if you will, a trade in a way, are also then benefiting some children in another country. And I'm wondering about the feedback you have heard from the students in the club in what they're getting from that experience.
Well, a couple of things hitting on what you just said. So the pre-Christmas course that I taught, we're on a different system now given COVID. We're on octets, same course all day, every day, 21 days. And so the class that I had leading up to Christmas was Psych 11. I teach all psychology. And so we're all about the brain and the effects of all of this on the brain and later development. So they get that. I had a group of students in the class said, can we write your kids Christmas cards? You know, there was a group of them. And I said, absolutely. And so they took it upon themselves and a whole bunch of them got together, made beaded bracelets, which is hilarious. Canadians sending, you know, beaded bracelets to African children. But anyways, you get the humor there.
Yes.
And so they created their own cards and designed them all and wrote them all and addressed each card to each kid individually. That's a huge deal for our kids there. Like, they're just like, oh my gosh. And on occasion, I get a phone call in class from there in the morning. Of course, they're 9 hours ahead. And so I've done FaceTimes live with my classes with our director, Amos, in Nigeria, and also the kids. So he'll call kids in and the kids will see my classroom full of students. That's just pretty cool, right?
Totally.
And so that works well. And getting back to your question about the connection and the effects, like what do these kids learn here? They can see the results there in children who were severely, severely neglected, completely malnourished. I'm going to say over half of them on the brink of death. Half of them would not be alive. And that's a sobering thought. These kids here in Chilliwack, they know that. They've been introduced to the children as part of my spiel. Hi, how are you? Welcome to my class. This is who I am. I run a PowerPoint. My history, my kids, blah, blah, blah. And they're also my grandchildren. So I have, you know, the babe and I have 7 grandchildren here and we have like 15 there. And so they're aware that for me, it's just extended family, right?
Yes.
And so they've seen the pictures of these kids in the bush, malnourished, no clothing. And then they see them now happy, cheerful. They're smart kids. Like, they're able to learn. There's a couple that are a little bit challenged, but that's due to real severe trauma. But they recognize that the only difference between here and there is that they're here and they're there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The ability to be successful, to learn, to be intelligent. Children is just the difference in where they were born and their circumstances.
Yes.
That's really sobering to this group here.
I love that you're teaching that, because we can be kind of insular in our experience and just look at the challenges we're faced with here every day. And they can feel real and they can feel significant for us. But when you compare and look at the challenges faced by those children and those families in that village, it can be a way of helping us appreciate what we have, but also to look beyond ourselves, especially as adolescents, at a time where it is a very natural time for them to be very self-centered.
I totally agree. And one of the lessons I think that I'm able to drive home, I'm saying me, not because there's not others that do it, but my class. So right off the bat, we talk about the difference between stupidity and ignorance. And, you know, there's stupid people everywhere, all over the globe. It's not, you know, in any one place. But there's a difference between that and people who are ignorant, and ignorant being that they haven't been given an opportunity to learn out of that. So, you know, we don't use ignorance as a negative thing. It's kind of like the difference between asking, you know, what's the matter with you, as opposed to what happened to you. This is a book now with Dr. Bruce Perry and Oprah.
Yes, I saw that.
But anyways, that's a significant question. And my kids here all really understand that. That is one of the things that I drive home in them, is your life is a story. And you don't start writing your own story until you're about 11 or 12 here. You know, certainly 15, 16 is when you should start becoming aware of who wrote your early story. And so, you know, those in a classroom here, some of them have got great stories already. Some of them have horrific stories, make you cry. Like, how are you even here today? Stories. And so I think their ability to see that, you know, the harsh stuff over there, certainly there's a bunch of stuff that just really won't find its way here, but there is a lot of similarities between bad there and bad here. Poor parenting, no parenting, you know, physical, mental, sexual abuse, all of that stuff. There's not as many people ready to get after it there as there are here, but let's not think that it doesn't happen here. And so there's a lot of people, you know, in our school, 1600 students, you know, don't tell me that we don't have too much evidence of that even in this place. And that's a sobering thought. A lot of people put on the face and they make it look okay, but it's not okay. And I think certainly in psychology, going back to that question, we're getting more to saying, you know, what happened to you? You know, you're not like this just because you're like this. You're like this because your story has kind of directed you this way.
Well, I like the invitation as well. It's honoring that we maybe couldn't control those early stages of what's happened to us, but we get to then decide what we do with it moving ahead. And when I think about doing this resilience project, I think about helping people to get up and move forward. And a big message that's coming out across the board with many of the guests is about helping others. And how that builds resilience for us in looking beyond ourselves. Even if we are having a hard time today, doing something for someone else and the value that brings in growing that story for us.
Yeah, I totally agree with that statement. You help yourself by helping others. Use the example often. High school is an emotional time. Obviously, there's a lot going on. High school is all about brain development. Everybody's bodies are pretty much what they're going to be. You know, so I'll use the example of, you know, you're walking down the hall and you see somebody standing and they're weeping in the hall, crying. They have nowhere to go. They're in the hallway. Do you walk by or do you stop and say, hey, are you okay?
Yeah.
If you say, hey, are you okay? What's their first response? And most of the students would say, yeah, I'm fine. It's okay. I said, now you could walk away or you could say again, no, seriously, are you okay? Is there anything I can do for you? And chances are they're also going to come back with, no, I'm okay, but thanks. And then you walk away. I said, how long did that take for you to stop and ask that question and then to respond, say, two times? It's less than 6 seconds, right?
Yeah.
Now, seriously, who hasn't got 6 seconds that you could show a little bit of empathy and inquire, is there anything I could do? And I said, the flip side of stepping into that situation and asking is that if they really do need you, now you're in. But you're in because you really need to be in. Yeah, you know, can I talk about this with you? And then now you listen to their story, and then you either listen to it, help them through it, or you listen to them and get them to a counselor or a teacher. But they're not going to say, yeah, let me talk to you, unless they really, really need to talk to you. That's just the way we're wound up. So I said, Are you prepared to put 6 seconds on the mat and see if it makes a difference in somebody's life? Right. Yeah. All my job is planting these ideas. That's what my job is, right? Because the next time one of my students sees somebody crying in the hall, you know what's going to come to mind first.
Totally.
6 seconds. Am I willing to invest or not? And if I was standing in the hall, would I want somebody to ask me? Right. So that part of the circle and helping them identify that what we really need is a little bit more empathy. A lot more empathy, excuse me, and a lot more people stopping to say, hey, are you okay? Can I help you?
Steve, I can really hear your excitement about what you're teaching. Like, I get a feeling it's never a dull moment in your class. And I'm curious, what drew you to teach psychology? Because I can hear your gifts in it, and I'm curious what took you into that field.
It's just hilarious. You know, I say often, people say, first of all, they say, well, you know, what do you teach? I say, I teach young people. I build young adults. You know, while we're moving through that, you know, they learn some psychology or some leadership or whatever it was I happen to be teaching. But my heart to work with this age bracket has always been this age bracket, not middle school. Thank you, but no, I just love this age group. So I've always been really focused on the relationship. I want to know them, because you can't, excuse my bad language here, but you can't learn them stuff. You can't jam it down their throat. All I can do is present, you know, here's some stuff. I think this is really cool. I think this will make a difference in your life if you choose to grab it. And if you have trouble with it, ask me. If you need examples, ask me. If you need to talk about it, ask me. If you're having a bad day, ask me. If you need to find me after hours, talk to somebody. We've been in the phone book forever. Like, I'm not hiding. This is what I do. And so 28 years has been really, really cool. And all the way through, I would have done it for nothing, but I never told anybody that, right? Just because it's been a great ride. I go to work every day. Nah, I come in here and I hang out every day, because I go home at the end of the day. It's like, oh, wow, that was cool.
Yeah.
And you know, what's that saying? You find a job you really love and you'll never work another day in your life. I nailed it with everything I do, but certainly with education, it's been fantastic. I love it.
Wow. I love the energy that I see in you. And I wish the listeners could see your face and your body language when you light up when you say that. And similar to Courtney, she found her passion. So you got that. You felt it yourself in your career, which is so lovely to hear, because not all teachers have that experience. But obviously what you're doing is working in feeding your soul as well. You found your passion in the same way you heard that in Courtney, your daughter, in following her passion. And to me, that is the greatest gift that we can do as parents, is encourage our young people to pursue what makes them tick.
Yeah.
But I hear her not being far off the block there with her desire to help people. And I have a feeling you're in a very similar mindset, if you will, to make a difference in this world.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure, Cindy, you've heard the 20-60-20 rule.
Yes, but tell the listeners.
20% of the people are going to do everything. They'll always volunteer. They'll always do that. 60% in the middle might help. They might not. And then 20% at the bottom, they're never going to do anything. They just leave me alone. And so that's another lesson I do. I go, like, you know, in this room, in my classroom, I say, you're in here, you know? And I said, how many of you know that you're the 20% who are always volunteering? And, you know, I get a whole bunch of hands go up, and I'll say, you know, that means between the rest of you, I don't identify the bottom 20% because that's rude. But I'll say to the kids that always do volunteer, I say, can I tell you that you're always going to? I'm in my 60s now, and I always have been all the way through. And so you'll be at something and somebody will say, is there anybody want to volunteer? And you'll wait about 20 seconds or less, and you're going to go, okay. And you put your hand up. You'll get frustrated at waiting. Why don't people volunteer? And I said, so accept that now. You're an agent of change. Be proud of that. You know, get out there. And there's a bunch of us out here. And so, you know, we'll be bumping into each other in the school and outside the school, right? When they graduate, for years, probably, you know, going all the way back, I've kind of always told them that, you know, once you graduate, you know, used to be teacher, but now I'm kind of your neighbor, your friend, hopefully. And now my network is yours. So now as a neighbor or a friend, if you needed something, if I'm the person you need to call, well, then call me. You know, could you be a reference, Mr. A, you know, or how would you do this? Or, like, I don't know, whatever. I'm one of those people that you can call on. Or I need a job. You know, who do you know? Well, I'll give it an honest shot. You know, I'll phone people. Why? Well, because I can do that. my position in life now, that much further down the river than them, is that that's my job now, is to help you get established so that you can do it for the next crowd that comes up under you. You know, it's kind of closing the loop.
Well, and you're growing leaders, aren't you? Like, you're growing people, like you said, change makers. And by your modeling that, it also gives a sense of community. You're teaching that in your class. You're teaching it in the African Relief Club, that we are stronger as a community. When we become insular and we just look after ourselves, it doesn't have a strong impact on this world as it does when we work together to help others. And so whether it's you're helping support the foundation that your daughter started, or whether it's teaching psychology or supporting this African Relief Club in order to help folks in Nigeria and Uganda, let's also talk about that other piece that you're doing, which is growing a program for psychology students to be able to grow their careers and have an experience through the high school as well.
Yeah, and that one was really exciting. And that program just kind of came out of psychology. My vision going back a ways was to have it become more real. And I found that when I was able to talk about psychological situations and conditions with my African kids, that the students here got it better because they knew that student, they knew the case study. And so then they could say, okay, we see how that affected that child. So the reality of that was really good. And I thought, well, wait a minute, maybe we ought to be looking at more of an applied psych. Well, how do you do that? You can't put students into a psychologist's office. Well, what about having the senior high students work with elementary children? So they come together as a cohort of, well, the class limits 30, and they stay as a cohort. And so the grade 10 group moved into grade 11 as a group, into grade 12, and they graduated as a group. So that was probably 5 years ago, 6 years ago. I think we're on our sixth or seventh cohort now going in, and the current group of grade 10s are, well, and the 11s, I can say that because the 12s are graduating in a couple of weeks, right? But they're just a dynamic group. They're world changers. Look out.
Wow. Tell the listeners what they're doing, like when you talk about mentoring younger kids, because I really think that's a very interesting piece of feeling community, supporting one another, older teens reaching out to younger kids.
Yeah, right from the get-go, the plan was to make it applied. In other words, here I'm in class teaching the students during the on-timetable blocks, and I'm teaching them all the regular psych stuff, how the brain works, like a tremendous amount of really neat stuff. But I'm trying to pull it away from the textbook and let that be sort of the ground zero, but I'm trying to add in sort of the real-life stuff. So then it was, okay, but how can they practice this? So if I'm teaching them about, you know, attachment theory, parenting conflict, parenting styles, attachment, detachment issues, contact, comfort, ACEs, adverse childhood experiences. Okay, so how do I lock it in? Well, let's put them in a situation where they actually can see and identify variations in this. So we worked out a program with our six feeder schools in Chilliwack, and my senior high students were then beginning to volunteer individually and in groups into the elementary classrooms. And so teachers in the elementary classrooms, if they had a child that was struggling a lot, they could request one of our students, and they would come in for a given period of time, up to three times a week. And I got to tell you, when you send a senior high student into an elementary school, they may as well be rock stars.
You bet.
Also, at the beginning, we wanted to have a multi-level mentoring program. And so our program here at the school, we have a formal MOU with the University of the Fraser Valley, with Ministry of Children and Families, with Big Brothers, Big Sisters. We do a lot of work in partnership with First Nations out here, the different communities. We target the students that are the natural helpers. So this is the kid who already in grade two or three, other kids are already talking to him or her as they grow up. So when they get here, we go through the application forms. We do the best we can to fill the ranks with the kids that we feel would be best suited. They start at that first cohort together. We're interactive with their parents. It's multi-level. We'd have a small group of students with a university master's degree or PhD student from psych or kinesiology. And those university students mentor my students on a regular basis. So if they're old enough to drive, they can drive themselves. If they're not, we've worked with Rotary and Kiwanis for volunteer drivers to drive them to the schools. And on occasions when that doesn't work, we hire a cab and we send them over and back to the different elementary schools.
I'm in awe because I think about so many pieces of the community coming together, whether it's master's level students or university level students who are then helping high school students help the younger population make a difference. If we could just see the brain development in all of these levels in the way in which you are helping to create a positive impact, it would just be amazing if we could just get a snapshot of the before and after. I love what you're doing.
It's really working, Cindy. It worked really, really well. You know, those that go through it all, they're ending up with 12 credits. Many of them have stayed with their little kid each of the 3 years. So if they come back grade 11, they'll say, can I be a buddy with my same little kid? Many of them will move on and volunteer with Big Brothers Big Sisters, which is a bonus for them because they see the value.
Wow.
So it's that big now.
I love that. Well, and I picture you as the hub of a wheel with many spokes coming out in all that you have been involved with. And I just so appreciate the really good work that you've been doing in that community and have no doubt that you've left a huge impact on the Chilliwack students as they've moved through your psychology program, been involved with the African Relief Club. And to think about all the kids that you have then also helped in those orphanages or those homes, the needs in the communities. Wow.
You know, when we go back to the analogy of to be a person is to have a story. You and I have written now since our many conversations trying to set this up. We have been writing into each other's story. You can't not. I'm sorry. Once in, always in. It don't pass through. It goes in and it stays. So while I've been able to write myself into the stories of all the students I've had over the years, the net benefit is, good gosh, look at the amount of them that have written into me.
Yes.
I'm no smarter than any of them. I know more about some stuff. They know more about some stuff. And so the synergistic learning loop over the years in the classrooms, what a stunning opportunity. Most of the time, it's just shut up, me, shut up. It's hard for me to do, right? shut up and listen, because you want to talk about a lot to learn? Wow, lots to learn. Lots of great stories. You know, 30 a day. That's a lot of learning.
Well, and I have a similar philosophy, even in doing this podcast, I get to hear from others like yourself that are making a difference on this planet and bringing that energy into each of the people you have contact with. And I have no doubt it's radiating out to then create people who also help others. So what a beautiful legacy in this world that you're leaving. Well, Steve, I just want to express my gratitude for you taking the time in being diligent and communicating with me to set up this day to talk. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being tenacious, because you are. Yeah, your pursuit was good, and that's what's needed. So awesome. I appreciate it. Nice to see you again.
Likewise, Steve. Thank you for being here.
All the best.
I really wish that I could go back and take some of my psychology classes from Steve when I was in high school. Steve has found a way to bridge his involvement with orphaned or vulnerable children, such as the Wanted Children Foundation, while tapping into an opportunity to teach empathy to his psychology students. As Steve suggested, you help yourself by helping others. One of the many gems that stood out for me in this conversation is that your life is a story. In your early years of development, your story is often written by others, like your parents. In early adolescence, however, there is an opportunity to begin writing your story. As Steve suggests, to be a person is to have a story. We can learn from one another, and as Martin Seligman suggests, these positive relationships also contribute to our well-being. Steve sees himself as so much more than a teacher. He is building young adults and places a great deal of emphasis on growing a relationship with each person, not just as a student. Although he's been writing into the lives of the students, they have also been writing into his story. When you get involved, you have an opportunity to become an agent of change. Through these various programs, there is a positive ripple happening on so many levels. Whether it is the master students mentoring the high school students, who then mentor a student in elementary school, there is an opportunity for each of these young people to truly feel seen. One of the protective measures that help students overcome adversity is having at least one charismatic person in their lives who took a genuine interest in them. While the African Relief Cafe is raising funds to help vulnerable children in Africa, the program is growing empathy in young people, providing an opportunity to develop connection and grow resilience, while also learning to be a barista. I imagine Steve as the hub of a wheel, and each of these programs are opportunities that he has said yes to, each one with gifts that just keep giving. I have often wondered what sparks an interest in us to help others. As we see those around us caring for others, we learn to do the same. If you are someone who has naturally been drawn to helping people, you have already discovered what Steve is talking about. If you've considered getting involved, but something has held you back, I invite you to take that next step. Listen inside of you for that spark or passion that quietly suggests, that would be really interesting. I would love to know how your story develops as you raise your hand and get involved in some way. I invite you to reflect on a time when someone helped you through a difficult moment. How long ago was this? If it was a long time ago, I want you to notice how memorable that was, how it stands out for you even today. Now, how can you do that for someone else? How might this change your story? If you would like to learn more about the Wanted Children Foundation, you can find their link on my website, A Resilience Project, under Steve Anderson's episode. I want to wish Steve every success as he retires from teaching this year, knowing he will continue to share these gifts and growing resiliency among humans. Thank you for listening to this episode of A Resilience Project. We would not be doing this podcast without you. If you or someone you know has an inspirational story or is helping to build resilience in their community, please email me at cindy@aresilienceproject.com. In fact, email me either way. I would love to hear from you. My hope is to feature an episode periodically on your letters of resilience. I'm very interested in hearing your story of how you have tackled hard things and what worked for you. With your permission, I hope to share some of these stories along the way with our listeners. Also, check out my website, aresilienceproject.com, to learn more about our amazing guests. Your presence here is important because together we are cultivating a village of resilient individuals. You are creating a space for their stories to be shared and a sacred space for learning to occur. I also have a favor. I would love for you to go to your preferred podcast platform, rate and review the podcast so that we will know how we're doing. I also would like to express my gratitude to the amazing team of volunteers that have jumped on board to support this project. You will find each of those beautiful people on my website on the team page. As you go about this week, I invite you to think about one way that you can continue to grow your resilient muscle. What is one thing you can start with today? See you next week.